Welcome to Inspiration Rising. I'm your host, David Trotter, and I'm passionate about helping you rise above your biggest barriers to reach your greatest goals in life and business. Well, in collaboration with the Behind the Lids podcast, which I also happen to host, I'm excited to share with you my conversation with my friend Stacy Pendleton. Stacy is a sound and energy healer, as well as an intuitive counselor who's been in practice since 2004. And she has studied extensively with shamans from South India, West Africa, and the United States. And she's developed a healing modality that fuses Sanskrit chanting, devotional singing, and intuitive toning, along with Tibetan and crystal singing bowls, bells, a buffalo drum, shamanic rattles, hands-on healing, visualization, guided meditation, and aromatherapy. Now, I have been in multiple sound and energy healing experiences, aka sound baths, at Behind the Lids with Stacy, and she is such a sensitive, incredibly intuitive soul, and she has given me some insight into my life that I was 100% sure came from the divine. I mean, she is an incredible conduit of love and wisdom is, I guess, the best way I would say it. Now, in today's episode, Stacy shares how music and spirituality have been a part of her life from a young age, how sound can not only calm our bodies, but heal our traumas, and how singing can be a powerful way to help us regain our voice. Now, I want to draw to your attention, if you have not become aware, I have a brand new book out called Super Conscious Conversations, How to Create the Life You Long For, One Conversation at a Time. If you haven't picked up a copy, I encourage you to head on over to Amazon, check it out, type in Super Conscious Conversations and David Trotter, it'll pop right up there. I think you will really like it. Some great five-star testimonials are coming in, five-star reviews, I should say. All right, hey, let's jump into my conversation with Stacy Pendleton. Stacy, thanks so much for joining us today. It's great to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So one of the things that I have loved hearing about your life is this powerful interweaving of music and spirituality. So when did you become interested in both? I don't know if they happened at the same time or different times. So take us back in your life and give us a little journey.
Sure. I don't know how far back you want to go, but pretty much since birth. when I started humming and singing and talking at 5 months. So that was just, music was a part of my existence and my self-expression from as long as I learned how to express.
Is that a part of the story that your family tells? Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you were so young. I assume that's part of your life story.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not framed on the wall or enshrined or anything, but certainly it's been discussed that I was a little unusual. Yeah.
So you started singing at that age, and then how did that, did you start taking lessons? Did you start performing? Walk us through it.
Okay. So I started taking lessons at age 10, and took lessons for many years and studied music in school and all of that and explored every genre, but sung classical music, a lot, along with singing in rock bands and singing in jazz and blues bands and writing my own music and all these different things. But poetry actually started first. I started writing poetry when I was 8, and then that became a vehicle for storytelling, and then setting that poetry to music sort of started the journey of singing songs and telling stories through song. And then in terms of spirituality, that's been just kind of a cornerstone of my life since I was really, really young. And it didn't really follow the map that was laid before me by my, predecessors or my family. With that, but I remember, I think I might have even told you, because we kind of had a pre-interview in your car at one point on the way to Not Scary Farm a couple months back, but that I was like 4 or 5 years old, and I was lying on my back on the like maple leaves in my front yard and looking up at the sky. And even though my family was like half-assed Presbyterian, that was kind of their deal. I had heard the word reincarnation somewhere, and I was really little. And so I'm lying on my back, looking up at the sky, and I don't know what the word means, but I have this intuitive knowing of what it means. And I see this carnation, a literal flower, opening, the outer petals dying and falling away, and from the center of the carnation, a new one, and on and on and on and on. So this kind of awareness from the time I was really little was just a part of me, and music and spirituality are intrinsically linked for me.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm hearing, just to kind of take myself back in your story, 5 months, you started humming and singing and talking, and then began at age 8, you had this vision of a carnation opening over and over.
That was like 4 or 5 years old. And then the poetry started coming in at 8.
Okay. 4 or 5 years old. My goodness. And then you started having these words flowing at age 8, and then started taking lessons at age 10 for singing. So did you have an intuitive sense even then that music and spirituality were linked for you? Or was it just, you're a kid and this is just part of your life and it's, you know, it just is what it is?
I will say that I was maybe a little older when I was consciously aware of that. But I will say I didn't grow up in the most like touchy-feely, yeah, free to be you and me, express yourself type of household. And so, but writing and singing, singing and storytelling, those were places in which it was acceptable for me to amplify my voice.
Okay.
And to tell stories, even if they weren't always my own, it still felt affirming to tell stories. And I also liked, even from the time I was really little, before I was taking lessons, when I was just in a couple little school choirs and stuff, seeing the impact that you could, you know, watching someone watching you sing, and you could see their face change, and you could see their body language relax, and you could see them smile, or you could see them be moved. And I had this desire to help people in some way using that. That happened really young.
And the route of professional music and singing and bands and so forth, did you go down that road? Was that attractive to you?
Yeah, I did. I started kind of going down the road of classical voice because I had studied opera for a long time and was traveling with an amazingly talented woman who I really pestered into being my teacher. And she was singing as Königin der Nacht in Saubersot, so the Queen of the Night in the opera, The Magic Flute. And she was at the Royal Brussels Opera. I was traveling with her. I was helping her take care of her child at the time. And she was telling me what the road looked like in terms of what it's like to be an opera singer, what it's like to be a touring classical performer. She did not paint the most attractive picture.
What was the picture like? What was not attractive to you?
Well, okay. I mean, her voice was just angelic. I mean, she didn't describe it in this way, but she was like receiving and transmitting spiritual energy through her voice. It was alchemical, this woman's voice. And so I felt that, and that I was attracted to. That appealed to me. But she said to me, she's like, this industry is brutal. People will smile in your face and then stab you in the back 2 seconds later. It's really cutthroat. She said, it's way more cutthroat than popular music. Popular music is like Disneyland compared to the world of classical music, which I was really kind of surprised by. And she said, you can do this if you want to do this. You have the skill to do this. And she told me that, you know, Italian immersion school in Siena to go to, and the Mozarteum Conservatory in Salzburg, and I do this and I do that. And then I enter the new young artists competition at the Met when I'm in my mid-20s. It was like this really clear trajectory that one is supposed to travel. And I was like, no, I would rather tell my own stories. I would rather find other ways of helping people and expressing through music. I just have never been a cookie cutter person that wanted to travel the road that somebody else laid out for me. So that caused me to shift gears more into like, music that's kind of more on the intersection of rock and folk and singer-songwriter type stuff. And I was in a lot of bands, a lot of acoustic duos, and did a lot of that type of music. And it just kind of became exhausting because it wasn't, I realized that where I really thrive is in creating and holding space for other people. I had this desire to perform for years and then it just went away. I just got fatigued and I wanted to really dive into the world of music as medicine, music as an offering to the divine, music as a means of self-healing and healing others. That just was far more appealing to me. It took me a while to get there because people tell you if you have a particular voice or particular songwriting talent or this or that or the other, this is the road you go on, you know? And I accepted it for a while and then I just kind of let it fall away.
So you talk about having this extensive training in classical music from some obviously very well-regarded individuals. And then you then shifted at some point to begin to get training from shamans, which is a whole different path, right?
Yeah. I mean, but what's interesting is that there was an overlap in the timeline with that. I started going to a Hindu temple when I was 18. I would be visiting from college. It was down here in Orange County, and I would be visiting from college and going back and forth and then became more involved in my early 20s when I moved back down to Southern California after school. And so the shamanism that I've studied the most extensively is Indian shamanism, like from India. And there was a teacher there at the temple. He didn't live there, but he was there regularly on the monthly pujas, the monthly worship. He did the fire ceremonies and fire offerings. So he started teaching like a hatha yoga class. And so I was taking yoga from him for several years. And then a few years after that, he started offering classes, learning these elaborate like slokas, like mantras and puja or worship, ritualistic worship of Divine Mother in the form of Kali, in the form of Lakshmi. And he lived at this space where like Orthodox Hinduism and Tantric shamanism intersected because his father was a Brahmin priest and his aunt was this like old school shaman from a total matriarchal lineage. And so he kind of danced between those two realms. And I studied with him for a number of years, very extensively. And again, sound was a gateway or a gap that kind of was bridged there because at the temple, we were doing a lot of like call and response kirtan singing where it's a direct offering. It's during the worship of Divine Mother that you're singing and you're singing as an offering. And then learning kind of the mantras that my teacher taught me, that's also kind of really it really illustrates and amplifies kind of the alchemical transformation that sound can facilitate for a very specific purpose or for a much wider purpose.
Mm-hmm. Specifically, yeah. Talk to us about sound and how it does help us not just calm our bodies, but also heal us and help transform, traumatic experiences that we've had. Help us understand that. What's happening with sound?
Yeah, there's so much happening. I'll start here. It used to be in ancient cultural traditions that were more community oriented, less individualistic and more communal, that everyone was encouraged to sing. Everyone was encouraged in circles to sing. And somewhere in Western culture and in modern culture, it's that's gotten lost. It's become, music has become kind of this more performative thing, and that some people have a quote unquote good voice and some people have a quote unquote bad voice, and the ones with the good voices should sing and the ones with the bad voices should not. And when I started teaching singing, I was still in college. And so I've been on this road of teaching voice for like a quarter of a century now. And I remember whenever I had a new teacher, when I was younger, I had to audition for them. They wanted to make sure I was already good before they would agree to take me on as a student. Now, I made my way through those auditions, but I certainly thought about all the kids who didn't. Mm-hmm. And all the kids it's like an emotional thing to think about all the kids who are kind of thrown away because their voice for some reason was deemed not good enough. And I harbor the deep belief and hold this deep truth that every voice has medicine. Some voices are like sweet, like honey, and carry a more obvious beauty. Some voices are more kind of smoky or husky, like you've been spending time around a ceremonial fire. I want to drop an F-bomb, but I won't. That's freaking beautiful. It's beautiful. Every single one is beautiful. And we all have the right to sing, to express. We all have the right to tell our stories through songs. And so I made a choice when I started teaching that bring me the people who have been rejected by the other voice teachers, bring me the people who have had the trauma so that we can help clear it for them so that they can feel a clear path of self-expression. I've seen even with little kids, or younger kids that I've taught, I've seen their body language and countenance and the way they communicate change in like a matter of months, where they, first came in really like looking down and not making much eye contact and not speaking much and seeming even sometimes like they weren't even present. But then within a couple of months, suddenly they're skipping up the driveway to the lesson. They're so excited to tell me about their week and all the cool things that happened. And they're singing on the way up the driveway and they're singing on the way down the driveway because they're in a space where they know that they have infinite do-overs and they know that their stories are welcome. And so it's about so much more than singing. It really is.
I know one of the things that you do is you work with people individually and in groups on gaining their voice through singing. Yeah. So I know for me, I'm in that category of let's be quiet when singing comes around. Right? Mm.
Sure. A lot of people are.
And yet, ironically, because of my long history of being a pastor and in the church, I've frankly probably sang more than most people because I sing tons and tons and tons of songs every Sunday, as part of my past. And yet there's still a nervousness, like, but I don't want somebody to hear me singing though. That would not feel comfortable. So how do you utilize singing as a tool, not just for people who want to get better at singing, but to actually gain voice in their life?
Excuse me. There's a lot that can be done in service of that. One of the things is just the basic concept I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, that every voice carries medicine, and that and to kind of start alleviating the tension around the self-expression. It's another level of self-acceptance when you allow yourself to be vulnerable to that degree, where you are sharing a story through song, where you're sharing a melody. And so I like to start, if I'm working with a group, especially, I like to start with like simple, the seed sounds for the different chakras, for the different energy centers, and just chanting sustained notes. And
can you give us an example of that?
Sure. It's just like the seed sound starting at the root, like la. And moving up the energy centers through to the crown. Mm-hmm. And you start chanting together communally, like it used to be. And, you know, and then singing maybe a simple healing song or a simple medicine song with the drum, and everyone singing together communally first. And then.
And would this be in Sanskrit, by the way? Would this be Sanskrit or English?
All over the map.
Okay.
All over the map. So the seed sounds are all Sanskrit. But then there are, you know, Diné medicine songs, Diné Navajo medicine songs, healing songs through kind of the Celtic, like ancient Celtic tradition, healing songs I've written, you know, all over the map in several different languages, but typically I'll start in English working with a group. So that people can feel a little more confident. And we go around the circle and we, you know, first we sing as a community and people, and kind of open the door for people to share their stories. And I have people go around the circle and share their stories of why they're there, what prompted them to come, whether it was someone telling them they couldn't sing, whether it was that expression wasn't safe in their family, whatever their story might be. I invite them to bring that story into the circle, because our songs, our voices, they tell the story of who we are. And so we heal exponentially when we give ourselves permission to tell the story of who we are, whether we're speaking it or whether we're singing it. When we're singing it, it's a little more amplified because we can feel it reverberating through our entire bodies. And then after that kind of space is open and people can feel the trust and the love and the support flowing in the circle, then maybe we go and have people sing a line on their own. And we go around the circle that way and kind of progressively, it's still a group conversation. It's still a communal supportive situation. And it's also a situation in which people are encouraged to share their own story.
Help me understand why this is so passionate. Like, why are you so passionate about this in terms of helping people gain their voice? Did you feel like you didn't have voice? I know part of your story you talked about that, you know, music and poetry was the way for you. Is that the primary driver for you?
Yeah, I think it's not the primary driver, but it was definitely a catalyst. And I think if you spoke with any healing facilitator or intuitive, there would be some iteration of that, of a seed of that story in their story. Because when we've done extensive healing within our own selves, we are compelled to pay it forward. And so that's kind of why I think where a lot of healing journeys begin. So yeah, absolutely. When I was growing up, it was a very much, and I say this also knowing that my parents did the best they could.
Sure.
It was very much an environment in which I witnessed people who were living in their own shame a lot. And so a lot of things were shame-based, and a lot of things were based on how others would perceive us.
Mm.
You know, there was a certain, and I'm feeling intuitively like there's some understanding with you and your upbringing with the church and you know, maintaining a sense of propriety, these kinds of things, sure. Respectability. And so there was much more emphasis placed on compliance, being polite, being pleasant, being obedient, than there was on being yourself, mm-hmm. you know, than there was on expressing yourself. You were meant to express yourself in ways that were acceptable, in things that you're good at, that will put a good name on the family, that will make us be perceived well, because you got to know, David, it's how you appear to others that matters, not who you truly are.
That's right.
It was that kind of a BS narrative, which again, I'm so grateful. It was the best school for me to learn who I really am, being confronted with everything I'm not all the time.
Mm.
It took a while to get there. I lived in the shame for a while, but once I emerged from it, life got really, really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So often, if we grow up in that environment, if we haven't found a way out of it, we seem to replicate that in either work situations or relationships that we get into.
Absolutely.
Right. So all of a sudden I'm in more of that situation and unknowingly going, how did I get I don't like this. How did I end up here again?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So
if there is someone listening who, you know, is trying to find his or her voice and they're trying to figure this out and go, yeah, I just feel locked down. I don't feel like I can express myself. Or actually, you know what, before I ask that, maybe somebody doesn't even know that they don't have voice. What would be some clues that you would give where they would go, oh, wow, I didn't even know I could have voice in that area. Like, what are some clues that we might not have voice in our life?
Difficulty making decisions. Just a plain old not knowing what you want, perhaps because when you were growing up, or perhaps because in some long-term relationship or marriage that you've been in, your will was subverted by the other person and you allowed that. Those are huge. Those are huge clues or huge key factors in not having voice. It's just a lack of clarity around what you want. Also, making decisions based upon how they'll be received or perceived by others. Making decisions in your life and spending a lot of your time completing tasks and acts of service out of a sense of obligation rather than a sense of love. Doing these things even when you're drained, doing these things even when they're at the expense of your own health, happiness, and or well-being. These are all huge indicators that a person hasn't found voice in their life.
So now I'm recognizing, okay, wow, I am having challenges with some of these areas. I don't feel like I have voice. Where do I even start? Like, how do I feel so nervous trying to even just send something back at a restaurant because they screwed it up.
Yeah, I get it. That conditioning is deep. I get it. Yeah.
So what are some first steps that people might take?
I feel like meditation is one of the kind of elemental first steps. And I know not everyone wants to sit ramrod straight in lotus posture on a hardwood floor. And it doesn't have to look like that. It can be walking meditation. It can be, if If listeners haven't read any Thich Nhat Hanh, I highly encourage it. Was very much a practitioner of engaged Buddhism and bringing mindfulness into every activity. So that kind of awareness where we really sit with ourselves and really connect with where is joy flowing in my life? Where is what fortifies me? What amplifies my energy? What drains my energy? Who amplifies my energy? Who drains my energy? All of these different things. And even practicing saying no and starting with small things and building up to bigger things when you don't want to do something, just practicing saying no and getting comfortable with what your no's are and what your yeses are is huge.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I even help people that I coach say is, you know, I'm not sure. Let me think about that just to mm-hmm. give space. Because sometimes even that no is like, I can't tell them no.
Sure.
But just the, you know, I'm not sure. Let me get back to you on that. Give right. space to then really get in touch with, well, what is it that I need or what I want in my life?
Absolutely.
And then sometimes even responding via text or email or appropriate, you know, whatever appropriate mechanism so that it doesn't feel so overwhelming.
Yeah.
What part of, so you mentioned meditation, you mentioned Thich Nhat Hanh's work and beginning to say no, really thinking about what are your needs, what are your desires, what are your wants. When in the process of doing that, people come up against some pretty strong emotions of, but I just mm-hmm. can't. I just can't say that. I can't do that. I can't make that decision.
Yeah.
That's something that's obviously much deeper, something that's going on there that's entrained beliefs, patterns of behavior, traumatic experiences. How would you suggest that they begin to address some of those things?
There are several different ways that have been effective for me, and I know other ways are effective for other people. But some of the ways that I find have been extremely helpful for myself and for kind of the community that I work with and within, definitely therapy from, you know, if a spiritual path is inherent, you know, to your life, then I definitely would recommend a therapist who has a spiritual focus, a spiritual center. They're out there. They are. And then also sometimes certain things, like in terms of talk therapy and processing, that's hugely important. And then there are also just that stagnant energy that lives in our body that exists, that we've adopted as like a permanent resident. But it's energy that can move, you know, these traumas, this anxiety, these stresses that can be so crippling, this fear of disappointing other people by being who we truly are can be so paralyzing. And sometimes some things can't be processed with the logical mind. They have to be, it's stagnant energy that needs movement. And so then I would recommend go to a healer, go to someone whose energy you trust and allow them to assist you in moving that energy. And it's a collaboration. It's not just someone lies down on a table and passively receives. It's an agreement. It's a commitment that the divine energy working through both of you, that the benevolent energy working through both of you is coming together in service of moving some of the stagnant energy. And you'll find that people start breathing more deeply. People start slowly but surely making more empowered decisions about their own lives when they allow themselves to go to that place that, you know, is also beyond the logical mind and just trapped energy that lives in their cells, that they give permission to begin to find movement, and those heavy blocks start to feel lighter. They start to feel malleable. They start to go from opaque to translucent, and they can clear, and they can lift, and they can move.
Mm-hmm. And then the great thing is, when we're in those situations where we feel like we haven't had voice before, and then we kind of exercise our voice. I know for me, I walk away from those going, look at that. Wow, that felt good. Look at the result that I got. I didn't have to do that thing I didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to feel weird. I could just be myself, and it felt comfortable. And then I get to celebrate, you know, like, yes, this felt
so good.
Oh,
yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I'll share, I was a hardcore people pleaser. Oh my gosh. Like, saying no for most of my life was so difficult for me. And, you know, in the past decade or so, I've experienced a shift, particularly in the past handful of years, but it's ever evolving. And I remember a few years ago, like a specific situation where I took joy in saying no. It was one of my, it was a client that I love. And she wanted me to like facilitate some like Zoom, like karaoke night or something. And I was just like, I didn't want to do it. And I said, you know what, that sounds like a really fun thing for you to put together. And she's like, no, I think you should do it. And da 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 da. And I said, no, I just don't want to. She giggled when we were messaging, and I giggled when I messaged it back to her. And she like, she texted me back the surprise face emoji and then the laughing, crying.
I love it. That's great.
And it was a good lesson for her too, because she was really working on boundaries. And so for her to see that, you know what, you really can just say no and go on with your day. You know, it is an empowering thing.
No no explanation needed, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You don't have to go into a whole diatribe or monologue about why you don't want to do something all the time. You know,
right,
you can just allow your no to be clear. But I also, circling back to what you said about working with clients and saying, you know, giving them kind of that key, or allowing them to buy some time to get clear about what they really want. So it's a, let me get back to you. You know what, I'm not sure right now, whatever that statement may be, that's also key. And that's also, I think those are really helpful training wheels on the road to being able to like cheerfully, gleefully know what your no's and yeses are without qualifying them. Yeah.
Love that. Stacey, you lead several things over the course of the month at Behind the Lids in Costa Mesa. And so one is Gather Around the Fire. Mm-hmm. And then also the second is the Sanskrit Sound Bath. How are those two events unique and different?
Let's see. With the Gather Around the Fire, I've combined sound healing and oracle readings. So we begin by opening up our intuition, by accessing our intuition through healing sound, through setting intentions, and I kind of, you know, take the energetic pulse of the room, and whatever the medicine is that wants to come through sound, whether it's through the bowl, whether it's through the drum, whether it's through my voice or some combination therein, that medicine comes through, and it enables everyone to kind of relax the logical mind and allow their intuition to step forward so that they can then be active participants in the process of receiving this information. And then everybody receives their own intuitive reading. And there's the lovely collective group dynamic that it's always divine arrangement who shows up, because there are pretty much every time there are people in the group that are having parallel experiences, and they receive medicine from the messages that they're receiving and also from the messages that other people are receiving. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes, and I find this really valuable too, people share their own insights about messages that other people have received. And that's one of the most beautiful parts of it too that I love. And they're more soul readings. They're more life path, life purpose type readings than they are, you're going to marry a wealthy doctor January 17th. You know, it's not that type of reading. But timelines do come through, and more specific information does come through sometimes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I have been a part of that experience, and it is absolutely incredible. How dead on your oracle readings are, have been with me, and that I see in the faces of others as they are experiencing that in the room. And I'd love to have you come back on the show, you know, in a bit, and we'll do a whole conversation about oracle readings and how you got into that. That would be very fascinating.
I'd love that.
So then also the Sanskrit sound bath, how mm-hmm. what's unique about that?
Well, the elements, I think the fact that, and I'll try to be as brief as possible, but since I started with chanting, since I started with just the voice and nothing else in the room, before I ever had a bowl or a rattle or a drum, that is the primary instrument of healing, is just like the vessel of the voice. And so, and again, this is where too, like I spoke about it briefly with the gather around the fire experience, but with the context of a 90-minute sound bath, being steeped in the energy of the people of the room for that period of time, and really feeling what guidance comes through for them in the form of sound. Sometimes lyrics come through spontaneously in English. Sometimes it's, you know, intuitive toning and sounds and melodies. And sometimes I'm prompted to chant a particular mantra, or sing a particular song in a particular language, but it's very much based upon the collective energy of the room and the medicine that's needed at the time, and allowing myself and whatever instruments of healing I'm playing to be a vehicle for that, beginning with the voice. And I also take people through guided meditation so that they can begin also giving permission to stagnant energy within them, whether it's in their bodies or in their beliefs or in their spirits, to find movement.
Mm-hmm. And both of those events happen on a monthly basis at Behind the Lids. So If you are listening and interested in an upcoming date, you can go to behindthelids.com/calendar and of course find those. And then Stacey, what's the best way for people to connect with you if they're interested in oracle readings individually with you, or singing lessons, or any type of work with you individually, or maybe even, I know you work with families or groups of friends
and sit
with you. So yeah, what's the best way for them to reach out with you?
They can go to my website, stacypendleton.com. There's no E in my name, S-T-A-C-Y, pendleton.com. And then also through social media, on Facebook, just under my name, Stacy Pendleton, and on Instagram, Stacy_Pendleton. And it can keep track of all of the different events going on. But if they'd like a deeper explanation of the different offerings, that the website's the best place to go.
Awesome. And we'll put all those links in the show notes as well. So if you're listening on your phone, you can scroll up and see those links right there. Stacey, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your wisdom and your life's journey. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, David. It's been a pleasure.
Well, I hope you enjoyed my conversation today. And if you were inspired, challenged, or encouraged in any way, I want to invite you to share this episode with a friend. Tell them to listen to Inspiration Rising on their favorite podcast app. Pull out your phone, take a screenshot, text it to them. Tell them to check out this episode. And of course, they can always listen on our website at insporising.com/podcast.